Here.
Mr. Butts?
Here.
Mrs. Cooley? Mr. Hunt?
Here.
Mr. Mason?
Here.
Detweiler and I are also here.
Stand for the pledge. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay.
Takes us here. We don't have anybody. Something they called in.
They called in, okay. That takes us public communications, but nobody has signed up. Anything for board work session? Not, that takes us to Mr. Mustine. Floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Want to jump up your podium?
First thing I'd like to talk about is our five-year forecast. And you have two handouts there. One of them is the forecast itself. And one of them is the notes to the forecast. Here and then go through the notes with you. And as I go through the notes, I'd like just for it to be more of a discussion and an open conversation and kind of let you know what's going on and answer any questions you might have. In the forecast, we still show going into the red in FY19. Okay. $1,087,000,000 in the red. And then in 20, $3,715,824. So that reality hasn't changed, unfortunately. What has changed from our last forecast? Our revenue, we used to have this growing with the update for real estate, and we've kind of flattened that out. Because we're really unsure about how the reduced the formula adjustment to CAUV is going to affect the real estate. We know we'll have an increase in residential values, but we don't know if that'll be enough to offset the potential decrease in agricultural values. So there'll be some sort of shift, you know, anyway between ag and residential. But as far as an increase or a decrease, it's kind of really unknown right now how that's going to play out. So what we did was just, or what I did, is just to flatline it from our current levels all the way out through 2020. As for the real estate, personal property, and property allocation, which I'll get to that. And then also the other big item in our revenue side is the unrestricted grants and aid, and the restricted grants and aid, that's our formula funding, our foundation funding from the state. We have an increase next year projected from $4,800,000 to $5 million. A large part of that increase is the last 2 years in the state budget, they've increased the opportunity grant, which is the per pupil funding, your base funding per pupil. It was $5,800 per pupil. This year it's $5,900 per pupil, and next year it'll be $6,000 per pupil. So that's a large part of that increase there. It's just in the opportunity grant. The other increases we show are due to, one second.
One thing I might throw out, Todd, while you had a little bit of a break. Mark, do you hear any terms as he goes through this? Stop him and ask, because
right.
The accountants use different terms than what we would use, and rightfully so, that's what the state requires. But it's
so I just want to point these out on here. The real estate's located on line 1.01. Zero, the foundation funding, the bulk of it, the unrestricted grants and aid, that's 1.035. Those are our two big revenue items. And then on the expenditure side, we have our two biggest.
Let me ask you a question real quick. For the expenditures, with us being more agriculture, with the CAUV calculation, won't that most likely mean less revenue for us? I mean, if it, just your personal.
It depends what, you know, I don't really know what they'll do. You know, I mean, if they flatline it, if it doesn't grow at all, then that's one thing. If they adjust it in such a way that it causes us a decrease, that's another thing entirely. I think we all know that it's not going to increase. That's the thing. So not knowing how it's going to affect that formula, I didn't want to project in a decrease. I mean, that's kind of a drastic assumption to think that we're going to lose property tax revenue. I'd like to think that we won't. But it's possible.
And the recalculation hits in 17, is that when?
Yeah, we'll get to that.
It's been very rare that the state made a major formula change and then left people hanging out to dry. They normally, okay, we'll give you what you had last year, but from that point forward, you're going to be screwed. So hopefully that's what happens if the CAUV values drop.
Yeah. Actually, before I get too ahead of myself, let's just dive into the notes. I think that'll be the easiest way to go about this. The thing I don't like is I can't leave the spreadsheet up there with the notes. So I've got the notes here. And I'll go through them one at a time, and you can follow along with your spreadsheets. Line 1.00, again, that's our real estate, our property tax. And read down through it here. Historically, our tax base has grown each year. In calendar year 15, residential and agricultural values jumped dramatically, 41.7%. That was driven, of course, by the revision to the CAUV agricultural values. Beginning in 2010, commercial and industrial values declined, and they continue to decline. 2016, commercial and industrial values for 2016 dropped by 5.98%. Like I was saying, we do project residential and ag values to grow by less than 1%. With the revaluation in 2017, we expect modest gains in residential values, but offsetting declining values in ag values due to an expected CAUV formula adjustment will result in an estimated 0% increase and zero gains projected for the remainder of the forecast. And then our last new operating levy was passed in May of 2005 when the voters of Madison Plains Local School District passed an 8-mil, 3-year property tax. This operating levy was renewed May 6, 2014 for a continuing period of time. So when you hear us talk about the last time we had new money was in 2005, that's what we're referring to. And if you look up at the top, that's a history there of our levies. This is what the voted millage was, and this is what it's been reduced down to. So you can see our total voted millage was at 45.95, and we've been reduced down to 20.06. That's where we talk about being off of the floor, or 0.06 off of the floor. And what's tantalizing about that is that looks like where we're going to live for the next couple years. It's just so close based on the CAUV, you know, potentially getting adjusted down and not showing that growth in value and property value. Going to be amazingly so, it's going to be very hard to get down below that 0.06. Just to highlight that, we didn't move at all this year, you know. So we were 20.06 last year, we're 20.06 this year. We may not get below it until the next update.
The question Mark was posing about the potential loss of even more revenue, the old accountant than me and the accountant Todd, we felt we were being very conservative with this because all of our history shows you should project growth.
Right.
Because we've always had some growth, but we flatlined it. So it kind of goes in the face of what our history says, but again, taking into account that CAUV reduction, I think that's the appropriate thing to do.
I think we saw such a drastic increase last time that we've got really no choice but to see, you know, a flatlining, which is drastic in itself, you know, to flatline throughout the forecast. Personal property tax, the next line. Personal property tax is right here, line 2. In prior years, there was some, well, we don't need to know about that. That's just in the history. We used to record this in another line item. That really only shows, since there's a big discrepancy in like 12 and 13 compared to this year, it's because we used to record that amount in personal property tax as opposed to tangible personal property tax. It's now recorded under the property tax allocation, which is 1.05. But the important thing in this, the notes here, is that the tangible personal property tax reimbursement was reduced by approximately 50% in 2016. That was from about $455,000 to $190,000 and has been completely eliminated in 2017 going forward. So we lost approximately $200,000 from 15 to 16 and just about another $200,000 from 16 to 17. We address that a little more moving down to the state foundation payments in line 145. House Bill 64, which is the state biennial budget that was passed, realized an approximate $300,000 increase in 2016 and an additional $200,000 increase projected in 2017 for Madison Plains for the budget biennium. Again, this was due in large part to an increase in the opportunity grant from $5,800 to $5,900 and $5,900 to $6,000. However, this gain was offset by the phase out of the tangible personal property tax reimbursement in 2016 and its complete elimination in 2017. Increases in the state funding formula to offset the loss of tangible personal property tax reimbursements has resulted in the district no longer being on a funding guarantee and is now a formula funded district. Does everybody understand what that means? That's kind of an important thing. We used to be a guaranteed district, which meant that no matter how we gained or lost students or programs or anything that affected our funding, we were guaranteed the same funding. If we came in less, we had less students that generated less revenue, the state guaranteed and supplemented us with an amount to make sure we didn't get any less this year than we got last year. The formula has been adjusted in such a way that now our state funding is beyond what we were guaranteed in the past. Okay, so we lose that guarantee status and we are now fully funded by the formula, which is, you know, can be a good thing. You know, because there's some predictability, and we can look forward, and we can, if we realize growth, increases in ADM, average daily membership, student growth, we get additional funding for that. However, it also means that since we are strictly formula funded, certain things that affect the formula now will affect us directly. One that I've mentioned before is the targeted assistance that we receive. So right now we receive approximately $1.2 million in targeted assistance, and the majority of that, if not all of that, is due to our high percentage of agricultural value at about 52%. And as that changes, that number goes up or down, then that dollar amount will change. So for instance, if that percentage goes down from 52% to a percentage, you know, 45%, then we'll get less targeted assistance money, and there won't be a guarantee there to prop us back up. Now, if that number goes up, then we'll receive additional funding, which the projections that I saw for 2017 show our agricultural value going up from 52% to 57%. So we should get a little bit more next year. It's the year after that that we're all worried about with that update. You know, so when they update the agricultural values, that percentage will shift, you know, whereas we were 57% agricultural, 43% residential. If they reduce the ag values down, then there's going to be more of an even split there. And that'll directly impact not only our real estate tax settlements, but our foundation funding, which is unusual. I mean, not unusual, but people don't usually correlate the two with those having an effect on each other, but they do. So, which is another reason why we flatlined our funding from 2017 on. We don't know how that's going to affect the real estate taxes or how it's going to affect our foundation funding. The next line is our restricted grants and aid. That's also state funding. It comes through on our foundation settlement sheets, just like the unrestricted. It's made up by our career tech funding and our economically disadvantaged funding. Our career tech per pupil funding has increased. Also, it's no longer under the cap. When they look to see if we meet a cap, if we reach such a level that they say we're not going to give you any more money than this, then that's all you receive. But being formula funded, we're under the cap, and the amounts for career tech don't affect that. So the amounts we get for career tech are in addition to what we receive on the formula. So we actually receive all of that, even if it would have put us over the cap in total, you separate that out. So we actually receive all that funding, which causes us to receive an additional amount from the state next year. That's one of the other items. Our economically disadvantaged funding is increased because our percentage of economically disadvantaged students is increased. So that's the other item there. We're going to kind of homestead and rollback and homestead reimbursement, line 1.05. The homestead and rollback is going to follow the property tax, but that is also where the phase out of the tangible personal property tax comes into play. And you see there that the amount's phased out from $455,000 in FY15 to $190,000 in FY16 and zero in FY17. So that's why you see that figure on your formula, on your five-year forecast, going from $1,003,000 in 2015 to $968,000 in 2016 and $780,000 in 2017. That's why that's decreased. So that's when I talk about the state foundation funding's gone up, but the tangible personal property tax has gone down. You know, we net out to close to even. You know, those two offset. The next line is our other revenue. Other revenue consists of interest income, student fees, open enrollment, and tuition payments from other districts. Of course, we don't realize a whole lot of interest income, unfortunately. And student fees aren't a large factor in that number either. The big number there is our open enrollment and tuition payments. As you've heard us say before, the money follows the student. So as that opportunity grant, that core opportunity grant, has gone from $5,800 to $5,900 and $5,900 to $6,000, that number we receive from other districts has increased also. As we'll see further down in the notes, the students going elsewhere, when their money follows them too, that number's gone up also. So the revenue and expense have both gone up associated with open enrollment. So that's the largest number there.
Is the deficit projected to stay about the same?
I think it is. Yeah, I think it is. Unfortunately, we haven't overcome the amount of students. I mean, we've increased as far as open enrollment kids coming into Madison Plains, but the amount going out has increased also. So our deficit, input, it has stayed about the same, about $150,000, I think, or so is the deficit. So, and it's the wrong way for us. We've got more kids going out than we do have coming in. I'm going to pause there. On revenue, does anybody have any questions or anything you'd like to discuss on the revenue side of things? Property tax or state foundation funding? Those are the two big ones, of course. So I want to make sure everybody's got an understanding of where we're at as far as how we see our real estate collections and our state foundation funding.
When you look at past history, and I know you weren't here when anything like this happened before, but when CAUV takes a big jump in one time period, historically, what's it do the next time around?
Well, I've got a slide that we'll get to in our 10-year plan that shows what CAUV values have done historically, and there's no time that it's decreased. It's always grown, you know, but we've never seen a growth that steep.
Yeah, that was huge.
And that sharp. So that's why it's really unknown. If it was just a modest growth, we project that modest growth throughout the life of the forecast and feel pretty comfortable with that. But I think everybody's was pretty shocked by the amount of growth shown in the CAUV values that I think it's going to be a little, since that was kind of unprecedented, the adjustment to it will be a little bit unprecedented also. We don't really have a history to go on where we can say, well, where did this happen before? Nothing that drastic.
I guess I don't know how to say it otherwise, but isn't it true, though, if CAUV or if those values of farm agricultural land decrease, the majority of that would be made up in, your effective millage is supposed to be the same.
Right. Our effective millage will be the same, and it'll be a shift from agricultural to the residential taxpayer.
Right.
What it will affect is the inside millage. So that 5.1 mils of inside millage where we realized the couple hundred thousand dollar increase when it did get adjusted.
Right.
That's what'll get it adjusted back down, or that we'll see
right.
a decrease.
Yeah. I'm just trying to refill my own head with the way that
millage
stuff works.
That's why I kind of
want
to make this more of a conversation, just so we can talk about where we're at and where we think we're going to be. Anybody have any other questions? Okay. Move on to the expenditures. The first one is our largest. That's salaries, personnel services, line 3.01. The Board of Education approves a new 3-year agreement with MPEA as well as with OPSI. It calls for base raises for the term of the Madison, if the MPEA contract set at 1% for FY15 and 2% for FY 16 and 17. Sorry. Caught it a little too late. So it's a 1-2-2.
Is that in addition to their step
increase? That's base pay increases.
Above the steps?
Well, it's a base. It's an increase on the base. So it'll increase every line item on the salary schedule. Every step increases 1%. Every step increases 2%. And we figure about a 1.85% increase based on the step alone. So if we were to do a 0% negotiated increase and teachers still or staff still stepped up, they would realize a 1.85% increase roughly
on average
in pay. Now you're going to have some teachers that are flatlined, you know, that would receive zero if they're in a lull, you know, they're in a flat period of the salary schedule. But overall, on average, it's a 1.85% increase. So you would add that 1% or 2% to that. So for instance, in 2015, if we had a 1% increase, you would actually realize a 2.85% increase to your salary. Or with a 2%, you would realize a 3.85% increase to your salary.
And a similar increase for the administrative admin people as well.
I believe we follow the same increase for admin.
The steps aren't quite 1.85%.
No, that's different. But we try to adjust the base right along with.
Generally, the recommendation from me is whatever the teachers get as a base increase, that's what we do for the administration. Of course, we're not there at this point, but
and we're not bound by that.
No.
You know, if we were to choose that,
right.
You know, if the teachers or MPEA or OPSI negotiated an increase and we saw the need to freeze administrative pay, you know, you could potentially do that, but we're not bound by that agreement.
Right. You know, with the projected deficits, that's something I'm at least personally interested in.
Right. Benefits, just the next line. Beginning in fiscal year, in 2015, we instituted a cap, which meant that the insurance increases for medical and drug insurance benefits wouldn't increase more than 10%. And if they did increase more than 10%, that the certified staff and the classified staff would bear the burden of that increase, or they could have a plan change. But it's with an 80-20 split, that means that the district's only obligated for up to an 8% increase in health insurance. So that's what we build into the forecast, is that 8% increase. Because that's how much that if we have to, if the insurance increases that much, we have to be prepared to pay that. Some cost savings that we did have along with that 8% cap, we joined Southwestern Ohio UPC. As a consortium, we realized a savings on our health insurance there. We saw a 0% increase this year, which is somewhat unheard of in the insurance industry. And that combined with only a 5% increase projected for next year puts us in a really good spot as far as health insurance goes. We also had a gap insurance program. So at the time, we went to a high deductible plan with gap insurance. That realized the savings for the district. Also, we went from the gap insurance, which we paid a fixed amount a year, had really no control over that amount of about $365,000, to an HRA. So the district funds that HRA. So premiums get paid in, claims get paid out. We monitor that throughout the year, and we can adjust the amount that we fund that HRA with. And that's adjusted also for not only the district, but for the staff. So if we see that we don't have that many claims going out, we can adjust it to reduce that amount going in. And that's passed along to the staff also. Right now, we're right within, like, I think it's 4% of where we thought we should be. with the HRA. So we chose to leave the HRA rates the same right now. But currently we're funding it total at $275,000, and that's an 80-20 split. So that's $220,000 for the district and $55,000 for the staff. And that's a savings alone of about $90,000 compared to where we were with the gap insurance. So we're able to see a savings there. So the savings for insurance were going to the EPC, going to a high deductible plan with a gap to pay the high deductible, and going from a gap to an HRA. So all those things are reflected in the forecast. Anybody have any questions on the benefits? Because our benefit structure is somewhat unique, in a good way.
When do you do the reconciliation? Like every quarter?
Quarterly.
Okay.
Yeah, quarterly we look at that.
This is really one of those, and I think Stormy might agree, it's one of those win-wins that we put together that, you know, it's controlling their premiums, mm-hmm. It's controlling our increases. I mean, I think it's worked well so far.
The other thing that's in the notes there, too, is that HRA, or that gap, didn't used to be in the negotiated agreement, and it is in the negotiated agreement now. So, again, you know, good for the staff, good for the district, negotiable item now. Also, with having that gap insurance and transitioning to an HRA, it's funded a little different now as far as how the payments are made. It used to be that the gap insurance was processed through a board distribution, and the amount was taken automatically from the general fund. Now it's taken out of an 024 account, which is a fund specifically for the HRA, and the board transfers an amount in total from the general fund into the HRA. So that's a little different, which is why you see the insurance and benefits line item going down, because that used to contain entirely the gap insurance paid by the board. Now that lives in the 024 account. So you see the transfer out of the general fund going up. So that's the big change there. Our purchase service line item, the largest expenditures in this category are utility bills and auditor and treasurer fees. We saw a decrease, you know, in our projected propane usage, but our electric has increased slightly, and that's because we have more buildings on electric cooling now and heat. But we should be able to realize a little bit of a savings here, I think, with the electric. Because everything I'm hearing is saying that when we get a new rates in 2017, that the kilowatt per hour should go down that we pay. So right now we're at about 6 cents per kilowatt hour, and that could go down to as low as 5 cents per kilowatt hour in 2017. But, so that's a decrease there. But we see an increase because now we pay our speech therapist and psychologist out of purchase services. It used to be that was in salaries and benefits because they were our employees. Now they are
contracted service.
Contract service through
the ESC.
The ESC. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, about $98,000 for a psychologist, you know, about $85,000 for a speech therapist, because that covers, again, that's not just covering their salary, that's covering their salary and benefits that they pass along to us. So it's a contracted service that we pay. We pay for that. So that's just a shift, again, from salary and benefits to purchase service. But that's why you'll see that, even though we see, you know, maybe a little bit of a savings in our propane usage and a potential savings in the future in our electric, that's somewhat offset by an increase in purchase service for our psychologist and for our speech therapist. The other thing that comes out of that, the number of resident students open enrolled in other districts has continued to increase. So this is the offset, what I was telling you about earlier, where we had that amount coming in for open enrolled students coming to us. That amount went up with the per pupil funding, going from 5,800 to 5,900 to 6,000. Out of this line item is where that expenditure side goes up the same way. Those students going out, open enrolled to other districts, the funding follows them. The amount that they're receiving is from 5,800 to 5,900 to 6,000 per student. So you see that number going up also. The only other thing there that we saw coming out of there, in FY15, we contracted with the special education director for around $45,000. We didn't need that in FY16, and we don't need it going forward, so that's been removed. Anybody have any questions on our purchase service purchasing? Again, the big things are propane down, electric potentially down, psychologist and speech therapist up.
The reason why those services were switched over to the ESC is they have a lot more base, they have more buying power. They can do a lot more recruiting in that area. As you have these folks float in and out, they can get those people for you. Also, these can be one-year people. Because the ESC, if you're not happy with them, I can say, I don't want this person back next year. Yet they still have to provide you with somebody, so they have to get somebody else to fill that need. So you don't have a long-term contract with that particular person, but you do with the ESC.
And they're somewhat hard positions to fill anyway.
Yeah.
So I mean, it puts the burden on filling that position on them. So. The next line is our supplies and materials. The district had made a commitment to increase curriculum supplies provided to the classrooms. This commitment was evidenced by an increase in curriculum supplies purchased in FY14, 15, and 16. This increase in supplies, along with the projected negative cash balance in 2019, while the district is committed to making sure that the adequate supplies are taken care of in the classroom and in the district, has resulted in a decrease, projected decrease for FY17 and throughout the life of the forecast. So we saw a decrease from FY16 to FY17 of 14%. And again, we had ramped up the spending because we felt there was a need there for those last 3 years, and now that is somewhat leveled off. You know, we've met the need, and we're going to continue to maintain, but the large need to make sure that those classes and the district as a whole, because there are a lot of other things contained in materials and supplies that are district expenses also. You know, any that would be your custodial supplies and, you know, things like that also would be contained in there.
The proposed 2017 budget has been pinched. And you'll see that next month when Todd presents his budget. But we pinched it pretty good, and this is one of the areas that we did ramp up to catch up in a lot of areas. But we're caught up now in those areas, and we need to scale back.
So. And once we did get to that 14% decrease, we didn't continue to decrease at 14% after that. We built in a 1% increase just based on cost of materials probably going up and from that point forward. So there's a 1% increase for FY18, 19, and 20 after we have the initial decrease. So. Capital outlay follows the same sort of strategy, for lack of a better word there. In order to maintain aging facilities in the district, capital outlay expenditures increased in 15 and 16. The majority of the expenditures were shifted to the permanent improvement fund. This, along with a projected negative cash balance in 2019, has resulted in a projected 35% decrease in capital outlay expenditures from 16 to 17. And again, after that initial decrease, we built in a 1% increase in 17, 18, 19, or in 18, 19, 20. So,
again, trying to make the DI levy bear the brunt of those type of expenses. So we're shifting a lot of those things we typically would do over to PI and decreasing. So you'll see that next month as well as we put out the PI plan.
And our debt service line item should be good for the board to hear. We only have $30,000 left on our House Bill 264 energy conservation program that we had. So that final payment will be made in 2017. So we won't have anything in that line item in 2017 and going forward right now. Our ADM projections are, again, our ADM is is pretty well stable. We're not really losing students, but we're not gaining students. So our ADM forecast is just a flat, stable forecast as far as our students go, our student enrollment. And just to summarize again, all that built into the forecast caused us from the last forecast to this forecast to kind of not grow revenue as much as what we had initially thought. And Also, we decreased our expenditures more than what we initially had in the October forecast. All that results in us, unfortunately, still being in the red in 19. But if you remember, and we'll get to in a minute, that number used to be in the red in 17. So we're doing our darndest, and we have accomplished a lot. But it's really treading water, so to speak. We're doing our best to maintain. So
one other thing about the forecast. You'd be asked to approve it here in a little bit. You can approve your forecast and change it at every meeting if there's a significant change. The reason why it's on now is Todd's required to submit in May.
In October and May, yeah.
So the assumptions on the 17, what's in here, he's using our proposed amounts. But again, that's an assumption. So if you guys came back and said, hey, we want you to cut everything 20%, he would represent.
Absolutely. And that's a good point, because when we do bring our FY17 appropriations, what I did to build our five-year forecast for 17 was to take the budgets that we reviewed and narrowed down, and consulted with Mr. Detweiler, and all these budgets for FY17 got to such a point, and then we took those budgets that all the department heads gave us, all the building principals gave us, we reviewed them, made adjustments. That's what was used to build the forecast. So those numbers of 17, right now as it stands, like Tim was saying, those are your FY17 appropriations here in FY17, what you're looking at here. If we need to change that, absolutely we can change that, because that'll be a separate presentation at the next meeting to approve those appropriations. Not to think that we're trying to put the cart ahead of the horse, because we're not, but I have to project something. And so in 17, that's my projection right now and going forward. Anybody have any questions on the forecast? We are going to get into some of these things a little after as we look at the 10-year plan. So hopefully if you have some questions maybe you don't want to ask now, we'll address some of those in our 10-year presentation here.
So like concrete examples of how we can, or how we're going to react if we get to 19 and we're out of money?
10-year plan.
That's in the 10-year
plan. Yeah, we'll address that here. Five-year forecast and notes. That takes us into the 10-year financial plan. We'll ask Mr. Detweiler to come up here and join me. If it's all right with you, we'd kind of like to co-present this plan, because it definitely involves us both, and both of us spent a good amount of time crafting it. Okay. You do have a copy of the presentation there, printed out. And you do have a forecast, a 10-year forecast there in front of you, too. It looks exactly like the 5-year forecast. One thing real quick, that 10-year forecast, if you see a couple numbers at the numbers at the bottom, your bottom line, you'll see some rounding errors there. That's just because when we did the percentages, it's all a couple, just a couple dollars. That's all it is. It's not a lot.
This should look familiar. This is the same template that we used last time. The 10-year financial plan, how it differs from the 5 years, obviously the difference in time span. But the 5 years is a required document that's submitted twice a year, as Todd pointed out. The 10-year financial plan is purely Madison Plains. There's very few school districts I found that do a 10-year projection to try to figure out when they're going to be in the red and what they can do about it.
We actually had our forecasting software come up with a custom program for us to allow us to create this 10-year plan similar to the way that we create our 5-year forecast, which is allowed me to create that 10-year plan in front of you.
So as we make changes based on assumptions, if you guys want to change, Todd can easily make those changes and project.
Yeah.
But behind that is all the assumptions. And as we go through this, you're going to see how questions are going to come out for you, me, and Todd to answer. The agenda for the 10-year, the financial activity, Todd will touch on that briefly. I'm going to talk about the district history starting back in 2012 when we started our 10-year plan, current financial status and future considerations. Those are things that are going to drive what our next steps are. So to answer your question, Mark, is what are we going to do next
those are the kind of questions that we'll answer and how we're going to answer them. This meeting is not going to give us all the answers. There'll be at least one or two more specific meetings about levies and are we going to put levies on, are we going to make cuts, those type of questions. And then Q&A. Everybody should know this district mission statement by now. We'll have new ones up before school starts this next year. Again, through strategic planning, we came up with our mission statement. And I always do highlight quality educational resources that we will provide. Again, that's the balancing act that we have to dance through, providing those resources and being solvent. District goals also came out of strategic planning. The community relationships will improve that by 50% of our baseline data, which we're working with SHP now to get a survey put out so we can get that baseline data. Improve the retention of quality staff to 95% by 2019. I think we're right on target for that for this year, so we're doing pretty good there. By 2017, we'll create financial guidelines. Again, that's something else we need to talk about to figure out a timeline for doing that work as well. I think this will help with that process.
Our 10-year plan is part of the strategies for that goal also.
This should look familiar. We've talked about how reaching your mission statement, you have to have a solid financial plan, and it can't be just 5 years. One thing I've learned in my experience, 5 years is too short to plan for school districts because it takes too long to correct the course you're on. If you just stick to a 5-year, a lot of school districts feel like, oh, we're in the black through 5 years, and then in the sixth year, they're in the red, so they're kind of ignoring it. We didn't want to do that, and we don't do that in Madison Plains. And your operational plan is what I recommend as far as programming goes. District goals, we've established those in our mission statement.
Our FY15 financial activity, you may ask why we're looking at fiscal year 15, because that's the only year we have complete data for. So we look at that to see how we're doing on a complete basis here. We started the year in FY15 with a balance of $6,143,000. We had $13,500,000 in revenues, $14,300,000 in expenditures. We always have a reservation for budget reserve and encumbrances, $650,000. Left us with an ending balance of $4,686,000. You can see that that's a lot different than the $6 million we started with. That's that deficit spending that keeps driving down our general fund balance. Our revenue makeup, we're about 50-50. We're about 50% funded locally, 50% funded from the state. We receive 47% of our revenue in property tax, 3% in tangible personal property tax, so there's your 50% there. And then in our foundation funding from the state, we have 33% in unrestricted aid and 2% in restricted state aid. Now that's 35%. Our property tax allocation, which would be our tangible personal property tax reimbursement, homestead and rollback, those items are there. So that's somewhat state funded also. Which would make up 45%. That leaves only 5% of other revenue. That would be like student fees and things of that nature. Our expenditure side, our expenditures are made up approximately 75%, actually 78% salaries and benefits. Talk about quality educational resources, our largest educational resource that we provide for our teachers. So that's reflected here in our expenditures and salaries and benefits. Our purchase service, as again we talked about, that's our electric, our utilities, as well as when we contract staff, that's located there, that's 15%. The other ones are somewhat small, capital outlay, supplies, other, our debt service amounts and interest and fiscal charges.
I expect to see this shift maybe just a little bit in 17. Because purchase services going up.
Yes. So yeah. This is our FY15 data. So yes, you're absolutely right. All right. This is
history. Our history. This is the first one. Way back in May of 2012, we remember having these long nights in here talking about our projected future. And at that point in time, we had $7 million in 2012. 2017 is when we were saying we're going to go into red. And we would have gone into the red if we hadn't made changes. So as Todd pointed out earlier, we've made significant changes, which we'll review here in a minute, in block 2 years. Okay? So we've done a lot to address our deficit that was out there. But again, there's only so much you can do. I'm sorry.
How, just for my history lesson, how did we get to the $7 million surplus? What was kind of, how did we get up?
How did we have a $7 million general fund balance?
Right.
Yeah. Well, it's just like, what's our balance right now? What'd you say it was earlier?
From 4 million at the end.
4 million. Last year was 6 million. You go in cycles. You get a new revenue stream, it goes up a little bit, and then it comes back down. One of the decisions that were made, that was made back in, which year it was, we bought these buildings, and a portion of the funds came out of here, and a portion of it came out of PI. So in the bat wings, what Todd presents, you can see in one of those years, we dropped significantly in that year because we spent almost $1 million out of the general fund, which reduced the general fund carryover balance. So in that year, your deficit spending was pretty dramatic because we made a decision to buy these buildings outright.
Another thing you need to...
You might, I'm sorry. Anyway, there you go, thank you.
Another thing to consider too is when you do pass new money, like we did in 2005, you know, you're collecting an amount that you see is sufficient for the expenditures at the time. That number doesn't change. You collect the same amount each year. Well, what does happen though is your expenses keep continue to rise. So your revenue stream stays somewhat the same. Again, with our foundation funding, we are a guarantee district. We're saving the same money from the state every year. Our amount that we received from our property taxes didn't increase because of new money, because they hadn't had new money since 2005. And so when that money stops being able to support your needs on a yearly basis, you start to whittle away at that general fund balance. And then that balance starts to decline, and that's where you get where you're at right here.
It's where you start to get torn between your programming and your staffing. If, to offset this decline without additional revenue, then you've got to make cuts. And what we'll be talking about from this point forward are the cuts we've made to this point to push out two more years. If you'd like, Mark, at some point, I know Todd's got it, I've got it, we've got buku years of general fund balances going backwards, so you can kind of see the cycle if you'd like.
And that includes like cuts the state made too, right?
Yeah,
reductions.
I mean, changes in state funding, things beyond our control, unfunded mandates that we have to provide for.
Is our percentage of our expenditures increase, has that been consistent, or are we growing at a rate?
Our percentage of increase.
So like our expenditures.
Are we spending the same percent?
Right. Obviously, we've got to spend more as the value of stuff goes.
Yeah. I mean, I think if there's an average change there, if you see on the five-year forecast, you'll see our historical data. If you look at the total expenditure line item, you can see the average increase in total years prior. And I don't have that right in front of me, or I'd tell you what that was. Here we go. So your total expenditures on line 4.5, you see it's 3.5%. So our expenditures have went up roughly 3.5% historically. Which, you know, when you figure inflation and other items, that's reasonable.
Boone and I's goal was always try to offset the increases in steps and base increases through attrition. Since I've been here, we always try to at least, okay, if we can eliminate this position, it'll offset, you know, any growth we've got for staff pay raises. Mm-hmm. We were successful a lot of the time, not always. The 10-year plan was first put together in 12-13. These are the things that we wanted to have that happen. Transparent financial planning, which I think we've done that. Academics become the focus of the school, not dollars. Because up until 2012, we were always chasing money. So some of the changes that this board and the previous board made were, let's get off the ballot so people aren't always thinking about levies. We've successfully done that. We're now talking about our academics. It's very enjoyable to be at our meetings and talk about the good things that are happening in academics and not have to talk about financial pieces. Now, we're getting close to where that we're going to have to do that. We know that. The stable financial condition, again, we've been stable because we know where we're headed. We're trying to push that out as best we can. So that provides stability. Staff recruitment ability. This actually was put on there a while back. I'm not sure why we have that red X on there.
I don't know, because I would kind of argue, you know, if an employee coming here were to see that we were stable financially and transparent with all of our finances, that gives them a good feeling about their future at that district potentially. So
think that was after one of our levy attempts failed.
I think it's because we weren't recruiting.
Right.
And we didn't, right? Is that what I mean?
And we still had that deficit out there.
I don't know, just guessing.
The summary of the plan back then, if you remember, we wanted to have financial stability through, and we had a question mark. So that's always the question that we come to, is how long do we want to be in the black? If it's forever, then there's a couple things that have to happen. Major cuts and a major increase in taxes, because you're trying to offset that deficit that's there. So that's when we talked about, Mark, what we need to talk about next. There'll be a meeting just for that question. Talking about levies, talking about cuts, talking about negotiations, all those things. And we're quickly getting to the point where we have to talk about that. And you'll see the timeline here in a minute.
And at that meeting, we can model any scenario, you know, plug those figures.
One of my biggest concerns is if we don't, I don't want to be, you know, have a mindset we're going to pass a levy. You know, our history doesn't show that we should be banking on we're going to pass a levy any point, anytime soon. I hope we do. I'll vote for it, you know, but I think I want to know what our plan is if we're running those deficits and we don't pass a levy. Right. What exactly are we going to do to keep functioning?
Well, then we'll get to closer to that here in just a second, too. We wanted to eliminate the 5.6 mil levy that was on at that point in time and pass a new levy. Well, we didn't eliminate that. We passed the continuous renewal of the 8 mil operating levy, if you recall. Okay. The 5.6 was the effective rate,
the reduced down rate of that 8 mils.
Right. We were going to eliminate it and then put something else on. But you see, we took all that off.
Right. Instead, that 8 mils right now sits at 3.97 effective.
But okay. It's a continuous, so we don't vote on that anymore. This did not happen in 16, and it's a good thing we didn't put 2.5 mils on right now, because if that's how we were going to address our deficit in 19, that's not enough. Okay, so that's why we pushed out the 19, and that 16 was if we were going to be in the red at 18. So we pushed out a year, so we bought ourselves a little more conversation time. We did pass the renewal of the PI levy November 13 and to communicate. That's what we wanted to get done in that. The plan summary at that point in time. So now we start talking about other things that we've done. We wanted to address salaries and wages. And at that time, our 10-year table payroll is 89.9 million. That was with a 1% base.
Actually, that's where we're at right now.
Okay.
That's our 10-year. Yeah, that's our projected. We were real close to that, actually. We were pretty close to that projection before, so that hasn't changed a whole lot. One thing that would cause it to change in the previous forecast, we were projecting a 2% increase on steps, and now, you know, we kind of whittled that down, and we think it's about a 1.85% increase in steps. So that's part of it there.
So what the plan wanted us to do was institute a merit pay stipend system, and we now have an alternative pay system that, through working with the membership, we will come up with a plan that will be optional starting in 2019 for them to join. Okay, so we do have that coming into play. We wanted, again, our goal was for it to be driven by district performance, you know, having a merit pay system of some kind. So that we did get into negotiations, so that's a piece that's pretty important to help us in the future possibly control salaries and wages increases. Benefits, if you recall, premiums of 12% a year, 5%, now our cap is 8%. We knew that was one of our biggest growing increases that we saw every year. It was anywhere from 7 to 15%. One year it was like 18%. We knew we had to get that done. We did in negotiations, not this time, but the previous time. And then, Todd, if you want to talk about that.
Yeah. We mentioned some of this in our five-year forecast discussion too in the notes. The savings for our health insurance came from moving to a consortium in 15, and that allowed us to realize a 0% increase in 16, and we project a 5% increase for next year, which is really good. And then again, going from the gap insurance where we paid a fixed amount every year and had no real control over the amount, We went to an HRA, which allowed us to evaluate that on a quarterly basis. We saw an immediate savings of $90,000. And what's interesting about that, not to toot our horn a little bit, but that was a shot in the dark how to fund that first year, $275,000. Because, again, we didn't have any historical data from the gap insurance. They shared very little with us. That was part of the problem. And so we, you know, put our heads together and said, well, we think not everybody's maxing out their deductible. What do you think it's going to be? Came up with $275,000, figured the rates, funded the plan. We were within about 4% of the total this year. So we hit it really close, especially for that first year. But again, that difference between that $360,000 and that $275,000, you know, that's that $85,000, $90,000 increase that we saw. And we've seen that in the last 2 years.
You might remember this slide. This was like one of the last slides in the big 2 hour presentation we did previously. Doesn't mean this is the last slide. Sorry.
Are you sure?
We wanted to have a facilities planning team. We have a facilities improvement team now. It's internal, and we meet on a regular basis to talk about everything from painting doors to, you know, renovating auditoriums, gymnasiums, that type of thing. Impact. And basically does both of these tasks that we wanted to have done at that point in time. And it has worked well. We need to revive it, but I think as we start talking about levies and things like that, that usually generates more interest in people. I wanted to put this up because I know the last thing we talked briefly about staff that had moved on, and most of these people actually retired. But their positions. These are positions that we didn't fill. So when you talk about what are you doing to control payroll, what are you doing to offset increases in staff pay, we've made some cuts, and I think people forget that we made these cuts. The industrial arts at the high school, we don't have industrial arts now. What we have is Mr. Kaufman is teaching a variety of things that aren't truly industrial arts. He's doing a good job, but we don't have an industrial arts teacher now. That happened back in 2012. Gifted coordinator, we had a full-time that once she left, we don't have one now. We have that split amongst Mrs. Grigsby and Christina Finney. Okay. Linda Neer, the principal of Madison Rural. We did not fill that position. We went from 5 to 4 when we came here. So I think it's important to remember we didn't say, hey, we got a little extra money here, let's go hire somebody else. We consolidated. Then you see the other positions. We used to have an extra math 912. Business management at the high school, we no longer teach business management as a separate course. There's a component within FFA and BOAG, but we don't have it as a separate course. One of our intervention specialists, when Mr. Laszlo left, we did not replace that position. Reading specialist, Jeannie, when she retired, we did not replace that. We just spread more kids on top of the remaining reading specialists. Your elementary principals, when I put Miller versus Carter Valley, it's because Mr. Carter Valley retired, and Mr. Miller became the assistant, and the differential between the two's pay was $27,000. So that reorganization piece saved us $27,000 there. Same thing with the junior high principal, Mr. Weiss versus Mrs. Legault. $13,500 will be saved by not having a junior high principal, but having an assistant up there. Director of maintenance, that's a proposed item. This is Mr. Kimbler as the maintenance supervisor going away versus having a Mr. Kimbler in his current role replacing him, plus Mr. Penny as the director of technology. Okay, the savings is $27,843, and we'll talk more about that later. And the work study coordinator at the high school is Mr. Will Pratt, who's retired, and we're not replacing that. We're spreading that workload over our intervention specialists at the high school. So each year you can see the new savings from not replacing positions. And you see the old savings that stays there because we still save that money. You're at $2.2 million since 2012. So when people ask, what are you doing to try to offset that deficit that's coming, this is one of the most significant pieces. And that's why, as I told you, superintendent and in Todd's role, every time somebody decides to leave, we have to evaluate the position and see, is it vital? Is it something we have to have? Can we live without it? Is there an easier way to do it? Is there a more efficient way to do it? Because you have to do that to get those kind of gains. The way I look at this is, what if we had not done this? what if we had kept our personnel at that level? Our deficit right now would be pretty ugly.
We'd be at 17 going into the red instead of 19.
That's what got us the 2 years.
That's part of it, yeah.
That's a big piece of it. So I thought it was critical we might remind ourselves of that. Another piece, the ERI, the Early Retirement Incentive Plan that we put in place. You remember we did that a few years ago? Actually, it was just over 3 years. In the 3 years since we've done that, I went back and added up the people that replaced them, the people that retired, and we're at $660,000. Now, I'm not going to put that up here every year because those retirees would have retired eventually at some point. You see what I mean? I can't say every year, okay, it's another $200,000 we saved. Well, they probably wouldn't have been here at this point anyhow. But 3 years is not a bad point to say, okay, that worked. The ERI that saved us $660,000. That's a significant number.
This year is just a good screenshot of where we stand as far as our CAUV values and when it's updated. You can see in 2014, we saw the sexennial reappraisal that was collected in 2015. That's where we saw the biggest jump. And then in 2017, we have a triennial update, which will be collected in 2018. That's where we're the big unknown, where we don't know if we're going to go flat or if we're going to have a decrease. And then in 2020, we have another sexennial reappraisal collected in 2021. But the reason we have such heartburn about showing that increase here is because that is probably the single biggest jump that we've seen from 13 to 14 historically. You do see it going down slightly here, and then it starts to come up. You know, it starts to go up right here so much, partly because of the decline right here. And then they get to this point, and it just shoots way up.
And you guys know better than I, without looking at it, we're farm values really low right through here, 4, 5, and 6.
Mm-hmm. These are state averages too, by the way, not Madison County.
Right.
But state average. But that's pretty, and that highlights it right there. You know, everything that we saw happen in CAUV, those values jumping. What will be interesting to see is this 2015, where that comes in. Right. Historically in the state average. Will it be flat? Will it be higher? Will it be lower? Really? I don't know. Again, along with that, our residential ag values have increased. You can see that. What that does to our tax rates, it drives them down. Okay, our reduction factors come into play. As values increase, you can only collect the amount that you collected when you put it on the ballot. So you continue to collect that same amount. The only way to do that when values go up is to reduce the tax factor. So we have the tax reduction factor. It's House Bill 920. Every time we've gotten to such a point, we've had new money come in. So you ask, how do we have such an increase, or a balance? That's partly it. That's when you ask for new money. And then it starts to get reduced down again, the rates. And then new money. This was 2005. This was the last time we asked for new money. This is as far before, historically, that we allowed the taxes to get reduced down. So what is that, about 24, 25 effective mills? You can see here since 2005, been reduced down, reduced down, reduced down. This is where we're at right now. We're at 20.06 effective mills. It's the lowest we've ever been, effective millage. Which would put us in a position for additional revenue. You know, that's the need right there. These are just arrows highlighting those increases and decreases. And then this is our timeline. Right now, what was done and what was proposed back in 2012. Go through the history a little bit since you were there.
This is where we failed our replacement. And you see over here the renewal, when it passed in 13, we're collecting 14 through 18. So in 18, we'll have to have it passed again.
That's our permanent improvement,
PI. Your operating levy, we got it on, 14 passed. Now it's continuous. So
So that will not be on the ballot any longer for us. This was emergency operating levy that at the time we talked about doing in 16 or 17. Now, obviously, we're not going to do that now.
No, but you can see, you know, we closed both of those off, and back then we saw the need, and we haven't done it, which only makes the need greater, you know, by the time we get to where we're at right now.
Hey, Todd, let me ask you a quick question.
Yeah.
If the real estate taxes do continue to go up, or real estate values continue to go up, what does that do to the 20 mil floor?
If the values go up, that'll bring us below the floor.
Right, so
we'll collect additional revenue.
But you don't know what the value would have to become to put us at 20 mil floor.
I can model that, yeah. No, I don't know what, I didn't even want to go there.
Okay.
You know, because that's a lot to think that the values are going to go up that much to me. Like I said, it's a little disappointing to see us holding at that point.
No, and I don't think they will go up that much, but it'd be nice to know how much they would have to go up. Because everybody talks about that 20 mil floor, and it's just nice to know how far away we actually are.
Right.
Even though you say 0.06.
0.06, but value-wise, you want to see what the values need to go
right
up. Yeah. Well, they went up in your previous conversations when you guys were doing the planning in 2012. Nobody ever expected to even be close to 20.06, to be close to the floor. So it didn't even come into your thinking. This time around, when we do have those operational meetings to see where we're going to be and what we're going to do, we will be able to model that. Because that is a reality now, you know, for us to get below the floor. Does everybody understand what that means to get below the floor? Check. Okay. Additionally, as those values go up, if they do go up, our SSI that's in the foundation funding will go down, our state share index. So that number will get less. So if we get more property tax, we potentially get less in foundation funding. So we'll have to watch that. That's again, those things affect each other, and a lot of people don't realize that.
Our current financial status. Right now, we're operating on a two-year biennial budget. The budget's adopted in every odd number year. FY16 was year one and two. It was adopted in 2015, so 15-16, that's year one of two. FY17, 16-17, that will be year two of two under the current state budget. Again, FY16, that amount per pupil went from 5,800 per student to 5,900 just in the base. And then 17, we go from 5,900 to 6,000, along with other increases that I mentioned earlier on the career tech and targeted assistance and other areas. FY18 and FY19, that's 17-18 and 18-19, those will be a new budget. We don't know what that's going to be right now, of course, but assuming that Governor Kasich is still in office, because his term does not end until January 2019, if he is still in office, we'll be operating under probably the same budget, under the same formula. If he does take another position and we have a new governor come in, that could change. So that's why that asterisk is there, you know.
The position that the Senate is taking, Bob Hackett told us yesterday morning that state personal income taxes are running about $91 million behind what they projected. So that's going to impact their budgeting process for next year, which I find kind of funny because the rainy day fund is building at a dramatic pace. And they're worried about $91 million and a multi-billion dollar budget. So they're already laying the groundwork for trying to press what we get down even farther, which puts more pressure on us to come up with more funds locally. So.
Which is what their argument always is. You have a large capacity to generate your own local resources. It's capacity. It's not a guarantee.
This is just, I'm not going to go through everything here, but this is the typical budget cycle. It starts in the beginning of the odd number year, so January, February. Starts with a proposal. It ends with the budget being adopted July 1st. Okay. Down here, mid-October is generally when we see the foundation funding come through on the new budget. Okay, so they'll adjust for it. We still get that full amount, but you're usually operating those first couple months on the old budget until they get the new budget funding coming through the foundation settlement sheets. Okay, so that's about mid-October. This is our 10-year forecast. You have that in front of you. Again, it's the same as the 5-year forecast. What we did is what we flatlined through 2020. We went ahead and carried out through 2026. And again, 2026 is truly 11 years, but that's what was built for us. So in some of these projections, you'll see that I only projected out through 2025, even though your spreadsheet there has through 2026.
Before anybody has a heart attack about those big numbers there, I did the same thing in our later years in the previous 10-year, because they're flatlined out here.
Yeah.
So there will be more revenue. It's just you can't really guess it.
We would be doing just as much harm by trying to guess some number as opposed to leaving it flat. But this does highlight the separation between our revenue and our expenditures. As expenditures continue to increase and revenue continues to remain flat, you end up with that gap, okay, between the two, which eats away at your general fund balance and causes you to go into that deficit spending. Okay. We start off with 2016. We've got a $1 million difference, approximately 14.8 and 13.6, about 1.2 between the two. If you let that go unchecked, as it stands right now, you would end up in 2026 with a $7 million deficit between the two.
And you, Todd, you said, what were you using for salaries and benefits?
Salaries and benefits, that models a 1% increase on the base and 1.85% increase on the step.
And our insurance benefits is
capped at our liability, which is 8%. We're liable for up to 8%. That's what we cap it at. We've got to be cautious enough to build that into the budget. Again, we had a 0% increase 1 year, 5% increase next year, but it could be a 16% increase next year, and we would only be liable for 8, but it could be that. You don't know. This is a juxtaposition, so to speak, from where the slide was that Tim showed you in 2012 when you did this, and it showed us going into the red in 2017. This is the same type of slide. Shows us going into the red in 2019. We have the same fall off. Again, that gap going from 1 million to 7 million between expenditures and revenues is what causes that steep decline. But it just emphasizes and supports everything we've been saying for a while. Future considerations.
I got you.
Yeah.
We talked about a lot of things, past and the present. Just as we walk across, the initial 10-year financial plan was in 2012. PI replacement failures, you can see one there. The 10-year plan revision was in May of 2013. Then we had the PI levy renewal passed. Our 8 mil continuing operating levy passed. You got your first appraisal that came through there. Union contract was negotiated August 1st of 15. That's a roundabout when we got that. Two-tier busing, you see that on here. We're going to talk about that in just a second. We need to talk about the possibilities behind having that in our district. And then our options moving forward. In green, you see the union contract expires out here in 18. The reason why we always talk about that is it's 78% of the budget. The new state budget, you see when that's going to take effect. Our PI levy expiration is out here in 2018. Triennial update here, and then you see options in blue. Special elections. If you want to go that route of levies, these are your elections that are available all the way out through here, and the last date to be on the ballot for either renewal of the PI or for an operating levy is right out here, November 7th, 2018. You've got April 2019, general fund goes in the red, and I was guesstimating based on
that. That's a good guess.
Okay. So, this is what we have to deal with now, and it kind of gives you a chronological order of the time that we have.
The other thing to bear in mind is that with any of those elections, you have to get them on the ballot 90 days before the election. So, for instance, the November 7th election there, our last time for PI and operating levies, you would have to be on the ballot in August, around the 1st of August.
So in this window, in this timeline, we're right in here.
that's what we have the time we have to deal with the 2019 deficit.
This just goes to speak to those deadlines, what I mentioned before, the 90 days out. These are our upcoming opportunities. Not that we would or propose to take advantage of any or all of them right now, but these are the opportunities upcoming to be on the ballot. In 2016, if we so chose to be on the ballot November 8th, we would have to make a decision and file by August 10th. Same thing for the May 2nd primary, special election there, we would have to be make that decision February 3rd. August, we would make that decision May 3rd. In November, we would make that decision August 11th. Then again, we have three more opportunities in May, August, and November of 2018. So we have seven opportunities there. You can only put the same levy on the ballot three times in a year. So.
And then, two-tier busing. Last summer, we talked about it. We said we didn't have enough information, needed to do some more research, and we did, and we have. We're not going to get into that deep tonight, but at the June meeting, we will. You can see, if we modeled the 2016-17 school year with two-tier busing, we reduced our number of routes from 20 to 15. We increased the route miles, which gives us more state funding, because they fund based on how many miles you're on the road. Our potential savings is estimated right now at $200,000 a year. Now, last summer we weren't sure what that number was. We're pretty darn sure this year.
We've got a good calculator that I built that we can examine at the next meeting, because again, this is one of those, it's a whole other presentation just on that. But you will be able to clearly see where those savings come from.
So this is, again, exploring all options to save money, do things more efficiently. And this is one that, you know, we didn't forget about it. We actually got a different software program. We got Joe involved with Sam working on that software program. We got some outside expertise. Todd built a program to actually calculate the cost, including everything in it. At the June meeting, you'll be able to see why we think we need to at least consider this.
And we're exploring some other software that will help us accomplish that goal also. From a time clock standpoint, GPS software standpoint, will be part of that presentation.
And that's the 10-year right now. The reason why I say this is just the beginning, we will have at least one to two more meetings to talk nothing but levies and cost-saving proposals and things like that. So this is not the end, it's just the beginning.
Well, we did say we'd have a question and answer, I guess, there. Anybody have any questions, sir?
I think you covered, I mean, specifics is what I'd ask you to get us. They're going to be hard choices.
The another piece of history that obviously you weren't here, the detail was in those specific meetings. We were saying, okay, we need to talk about levy options. We need to talk about what kind of programming cuts or what we're going to do. That's when you start white sheeting all around this room and start picking out, well, that makes sense, but that doesn't make sense. And we're prepared at that point in time to give you details on, well, if we don't have this, what will we save? That kind of discussion.
So you just got a taste of what it takes to get through just the five-year forecast and the notes and this 10-year plan. To try and cover all that in one or two meetings is a lot.
We had many 3- and 4-hour meetings. We really did, just on those topics. So it's a lot of work.
And I do appreciate the things you guys have already done by those years. Healthcare savings, all that kind of stuff, very appreciated.
It's all part of the history that we all need to know, so moving forward we understand how we got here.
Okay. Anything else for Todd? Okay. I guess we'll move on to approving the five-year forecast.
Mr. President, I move that upon recommendation of the Treasurer, the Board adopt the five-year forecast beginning fiscal year 2016 through fiscal year 2020 as presented.
Second.
Any discussion?
I will say that there were a couple things there, just those slight edits where I had a 15 or a 16, and I'll make those changes, but nothing that will affect the dollars on the forecast at all.
Just to be clear, we can make changes to this.
Absolutely.
It's a living, breathing document.
This is my required filing. It has to be filed for me.
The longer you're on the board, you'll see this changes.
It evolves, right? It's a working plan.
Any further discussion? Call roll, please.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Mr. Hunter?
Yes.
Mr. Mason?
Yes.
Mr. Dodds?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Going into my report, if the yep. board would like, I mean, we can have an executive session to discuss these items, or it's up to the board's discretion.
You like an executive session?
So I need to make that motion.
Yeah,
I can read it. Okay. I move to it, number one. I move to enter into executive session at, what is it, 7:25? PM for the purpose of one or more of the following under Ohio Revised Code 121.22G, Section 1, to consider the appointment, employment, dismissal, discipline, promotion, demotion, or compensation of a public employee or official, or the investigation of charges or complaints against a public employee, official, licensee, or regulated individual.
Second.
Discussion? Call roll, please.
Mr. Dodds?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Mr. Mason?
Yes.
Mr. Hunter?
No.
Motion carries 4-1.
And we'll limit this to 15 minutes. I think we can get this done in 15 minutes. And then we'll reconvene at 20 till. Right back up from there. So we'll go ahead and use this room if that's okay.
Section 1.
Just section 1.
I wanted to ask, what is the difference